Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu.
And I'm Carrie Diamond.
And we're the founders of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food.
First, a shout out to our sponsors. Prince Street, the new fresh podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. And the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today.
So, how would you like to co-host an episode of Radio Cherry Bomb? There's a great charity buzz auction going on right now, and if you win, you can come on air with us and talk about your company, your latest project, your kids, or whatever you want. All proceeds support Heritage Radio Network, the home of Radio Cherry Bomb, and lots of other great food programming. All of the Heritage Radio shows are recorded in a shipping container located in the back of Roberta's, the famous pizza restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Yes, we really record our show in the shipping container. Go to charitybuzz.com right now and check out all the Heritage Radio auctions.
Now for today's guest. She's the queen of the cupcake world. She's been named one of the sexiest redheads in the universe. And she's one of the funniest people on the food scene. She is Allison Robicelli, and she and her husband Matt are the founders of Robicelli's Bakery, which is famous for such inspired treats as the Nutella lasagna combination, known as Nutella lasagna, and the Passover favorite, tiramisu. She co-authored the 2013 cookbook, Robicelli's A Love Story with Cupcakes, which is one of the funniest cookbooks around. You should buy it just to read Allison's love letter to cupcakes, which she wrote for the cupcake haters, the cupcake-hating media, and the cupcake conspiracy theorists among us. Allison is about to unleash her world domination plan on us all, and we can't wait to hear about it. We're thrilled to be interviewing her for the first time. Allison Robicelli, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
We're so excited you're here.
Apologize. I'm excited. I'm a lot excited too, even though it's allergy season and I sound like a frog. I have so much to talk about, as always.
Yeah, you have a ton going on in your life right now. So where do we even begin? Your bakery in Bay Ridge?
We closed that.
Is closed
we
right now.
We closed that, thank God.
Except for wholesale orders.
Yeah, we're doing some wholesale. Mm-hmm. We're doing some shipping, but we're moving to Baltimore this year. So,
what is that all about? Why Baltimore?
You know, I grew up in New York City, and I think everyone's talked enough about how New York City has changed, so I don't need to go back into that. But, I miss it, and I don't know if it's that, you're nostalgic for the bad old days, but you forgot what it was like to be, mugged at knife point. I did not enjoy that any of the times it happened. But there was that was the feeling of, creativity and possibility. And I had just gotten to a breaking point, and I, went on Facebook, and I mentioned give me a reason to stay here. And I had 100 responses from all my friends, and they're like, get the hell out. Get out. And, I took an inventory of, all the things I've wanted to do in my life and things I've already done and what was stopping me. I've had a second book in process for, 2 years, hadn't finished the proposal. It's, this beautiful outline that needs to get filled in. I hadn't been food writing. We had been playing with the idea of starting a cannabis company because both my husband and I have had health problems. you know, wanted to travel more. And I was like, I'm just so trapped. So I was like, all right, you know, let's move. Somebody suggested Baltimore. We went. We fell in love with it. It's a city that's growing and changing. It's a city that knows it has problems, and you know it. And the people are trying to fix it. It's not like, oh, we'll just wait for the government to do something. Like, you know, you have artists out there creating stuff and creating festivals. A lot of weirdos. I mean, this is the home of John Waters. Last week they had their like fifth annual kinetic sculpture water race. Which is where people build these floats and they race them in the water out of like bicycle parts. There is a toilet bowl go-kart race every September. There is a friend of mine, he's become a friend of mine, who's like this neighborhood ambassador that does not wear pants all year long. Like, that's his thing. And it's like, wow, like I like this feeling again. I like this idea of being able to show my kids, because I have an 8 and 9 year old boys. And when you have kids, you really start to see everything in the world differently. So it's not just, this is what I want. It's like, what parts of the world do I want to show them? Do I want to show them a world where they can only work on Wall Street to afford an apartment, where they see their parents and their parents' friends fighting about money all the time and just trying, you know, and these are successful people, and trying to make a go of things and, you know, working as hard as they can and, you know, struggling? Or do I want to show them a place where if they have an idea, yeah, you know, you could do it. Like when we were kids, you know, we wanted to throw together a hardcore show. We did it. If you wanted to do an art show, we did it. And now it's like, now where's our corporate sponsors to do that? I'm like, I can't do this for them. So, yeah. And yeah, the people in Baltimore are awesome. So love at first sight. We're moving my birthday, August 1st. And we are opening up in a part of town that hasn't seen a lot of commercial development for about 30 years. It was important to us to kind of like, you know, give an area a jump start. Give, you know, I'm not going down there just to like open up in the Inner Harbor and be a tourist thing. I'm like, I want to create jobs. I want to do the same things down there that I was involved with in the Brooklyn food scene when we started, what was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, you did not pick a trendy part of Brooklyn.
No, I mean, I picked the neighborhood I grew up in, you know, and we somehow, like, you know, I feel very grateful that we kind of got lumped into the Brooklyn food scene at the time we did, but we have always been playing by our own rules. I'm a person who, I can be difficult. I get that. I have, you know, I have ADD and I have a lot of ideas and I, you know, kind of like running away with them. And this is why my husband's amazing, because he kind of pulls me back and he's like, you know, tries to keep me back in reality and keep everything together. But like I really advocated a lot for the food businesses of South Brooklyn because nobody was paying attention to them. And, you know, there was a lot of resentment. I'm like, we've been here all our lives and we stuck it out through the bad old days. And like, again, I've been mugged at knife point many times. And I'm like, and then you guys get to come here and, you know, be like, oh, we discovered Brooklyn. We have all this credit. And I was like, no. Yeah.
Are you worried about any carpetbagger?
Oh, you know what?
From Baltimore?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of 50-50. There are people there who give you the kind of carpetbagger stuff. But more people are really happy about it. Like when the news broke. And first of all, I'd never sent out a press release about the news. Somebody found out because they saw me talking to the developer in Brooklyn and noticed an exchange on my Facebook, personal Facebook page. My mom found out I was moving because of the news.
Oh, no.
Somebody stopped her on the street. She's like, I heard your daughter's moving to Baltimore. I saw it on the news. I got a very angry text. And I'm like, I had been on the phone all day with like Zagat and all these things. So it was very surprising. And I've gotten so many welcome letters to the city because they are very aware of their reputation. Everyone in New York City and everyone outside is like, you know, you're going to get shot or, you know, it's terrible. I'm like, I lived here in the 80s. I got it.
Andrea's got it under control.
Yeah.
She's used to it.
Yeah. And I was like, but these people are like, you know, when you go to Baltimore, it's not The Wire. It's not Homicide: Life on the Street. It's not what you saw on TV. So a lot of people are really happy that people are coming and believing in them. And the food scene is insane down there.
So, Allison, at the same time, you got this huge franchising deal. Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sort of. It was just kind of really surreal and awesome because it was something that we've wanted to do for a very long time. And, you know, it came from the move to Baltimore that it suddenly became this huge international incident that we were leaving, which I did not expect. I mean, you know, I was in Mashable for it. Like, it was big.
I think the UN got involved at one point, right?
No, like, I had people from the city government calling me, and I was like, you know, I was like, I just want to move. I mean, I just want my kids to, like, you know, have maybe a yard. This was not supposed to be a thing. And somebody, the guy who took five guys from five locations to, like, 5,000 saw this. And, you know, he researched us and he was talking to us and he really liked our approach and our ethics. A lot of times I've talked to people over the past, like, 8 or 9 years we've been in business. You know, they wanted to change everything. And, you know, I've heard people, like, saying we're going to hire people for, like, $4 an hour, or we're going to, you know, put everything in chemicals and mixes. And, you know, we told them, we're like, listen, you know, we don't need to necessarily be making the most crazy stuff on earth. But where we've always wanted to do is just make something very good for working class people. You know, it doesn't necessarily be reinventing the wheel, but you should have, like, if you have $4 in your pocket, you should be able to sit down and have something nice. And he got that. And we decided, you know, we're going to build these things with real chefs involved. And there is a pastry chef problem in this country because our industry keeps, like, kind of contracting. There's less opportunities for us. You know, more places are going to the mixes and to the industrial stuff. You know, real estate's at a premium. There's not room for kitchens. And he's like, we're going to give pastry chefs real jobs, and we're going to bring good food all over the world to people. And we were like, okay, you know, we're down with that. You know, we just want to make – we've always wanted to make millions of people happy. And that's kind of, you know, it's funny about, like, coffee and cake. I don't know if anybody else had this phrase growing up, but my grandmother was always like, you know, come over for coffee and cake. And people used to say that. And you'd always have, like, an Entenmann's cake or something in the house, or goodies, as my grandmother called them. And you come over and you'd have some coffee and cake and you talk. And we don't do that anymore, you know. And I just want to give a place for, you know, after dinner, or, like, you know, to go with my kids and play a board game and actually talk instead of, you know, being home and being plugged in all the time. So, yeah, that's the future over the next 10 years.
So that's the timeline. And how many locations?
We're committed to 100 locations worldwide over the next 10 years. Baltimore is going to be the prototype. So that's actually going to be kind of, you know, the headquarters, the ground zero. Then we're going to hopefully sell the rights back to New York and across the globe. I mean, it's you know, this is kind of a crazy time for me, but it's a very relieving time. Like, I'm kind of putting all this into somebody else's hands for
I was going to ask about that. I mean, anybody who has a small business is somewhat of a control freak.
Yeah.
I don't know you well enough to call you a control freak, but I'm guessing.
It depends. Yeah. It depends. I have, you know, I have a lot of different things going on because, again, I said before, I made that list of, you know, the things I want in my life. I mean, when I started Robicelli's with Matt, I was 27, and I'll be 36 this year. And, you know, I'm a much different person. My kids are grown somewhat. They were, like, you know, one of them wasn't even born when I started. And, you know, a lot of ways Robicelli's ran its course. We got it where we wanted. We accomplished a lot of the things we set out to do. But at this point, we're like,
did it run its course, or did you take it as far as you could?
I took it as far as I could. I made a lot of the, you know, this sounds ridiculous because it's a bakery, but, like, I made a lot of the points I wanted to, like the Nutella lasagna was satire. You know, I think it was like 2 or 3 days ago, I opened up my email and it was one of those, like, Thrillist or Tastemade or something things. And it was like, you know, all these new food trends. And I'm like, I did this one 2 years ago. I did this one 4 years ago. You know, we were one of the first people to really bring a lot of international ingredients from different parts of Brooklyn into something pedestrian like cupcakes. Like, I don't really like cupcakes. But what I liked about it was, like, it's portable and it's bite-sized.
Gilly, don't tweet that.
Yeah. But, no, well, I can barely eat desserts anymore. But it was something that, like, was accessible. So people would not necessarily try something from Brighton Beach or from the Middle Eastern stores I go to in Bay Ridge. But you gave them a cupcake. They're like, okay, I'll try this. And that was cool. So now there's, like, okay, so I've done this. And, you know, I knew X amount. And now there's other people going to, you know, take it and expand it. And I'm okay with it at this point. Like, I know what the core needs to be. But, yeah, I have to, you know, I have another book I want to write. I have the cannabis thing, like I was mentioning. You know, maybe we have a couple other restaurant concepts in our head that we've wanted to do for a bit. You know, we'll see how it goes. But I can't be the same person every year of my life. You know, 36 needs to be different than 27, and 40's got to be different than 36.
So this morning you sent me an email and mentioned the cannabis project that you're working on, due in part to your experience as a cancer survivor, your husband's PTSD after 9/11. What can you tell us about the cannabis project?
Well, you know, currently we started working on this in September. It's been really hush-hush until recently, and I've started talking about it a little bit more because we're going into a prototyping phase. But when I had chemo, when I was going through chemo, I can't describe how awful it is, to the point where I've pretty much blacked it out for the past 14. No, wait, I finished chemo in 2002.
And how old were you again?
I was diagnosed 5 days before my 21st birthday with stage 4 cancer. And, you know, knock on wood, I'm still cancer-free. You know, but I mean, I lost all my hair and I got a lot of scars and it was really, really painful. I still have a lot of bone pain from it. And when you're going through chemo, you essentially feel like you're rotting from the inside out. You feel yourself dying. And I have a lot of empathy for people who, like, you know, have cancer, because there were times where I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm good. I can die. I'd be okay with this. But when I would use cannabis and I'd have to smoke it, which was not, smoking cannabis is not comfortable when you are going through chemo, your lungs are killing you, but it would sort of like neutralize it. So, I mean, during those days I had chemo, I wasn't getting high. It was just like, it was taking that crippling pain away.
It was medicine.
Yeah, it was medicine. And I don't use it recreationally at all. I've been sober for years. After I had kids, I was like, okay, I'm gonna stop drinking, and I've got 2 years of sobriety under my belt. I'm not fun. I'm just not fun at parties. And you know, my husband, when I met him, you know, he had very, very bad PTSD, and he has a lot of health problems. His legs are held together with screws. He was a paramedic on 9/11. 7 of his friends died right in front of him. You know, my husband had he's had a very, very, very bad experience. And his doctor, actually, for migraines, said, he was like, listen, I'm going to prescribe you something that's going to eventually give you a heroin problem. Or you could go buy pot, which is illegal, and your migraines will go away. But I didn't tell you that. And, you know, he started using this for migraines very sporadically. And, you know, a part of you feels like if you've had cancer and you've been sick, there's got to be a reason that you had it. And I'm not saying, like, you know, there's some kind of divine influence that was like, I'm going to give you cancer so you can make cannabis edibles one day. But, you know, you have to personally kind of find the purpose, because otherwise it was like, oh, I had cancer and it was just a thing. And, like, yeah, it made me, like, really tough, and it made me very resilient. But it's like, if I can do this and I can help other people and help them stop suffering, it's like, okay, then it was worth it to me. And it makes me feel kind of better of the experiences that I learned. So what we've been working on for 6 months is mostly on paper. I think people don't realize the amount of research that sometimes goes into the R&D process. We've been doing research on the chemicals involved and, you know, the history of it and demographics and why people use it and how it helps different diseases. And then the legal stuff, like...
Well, the legal stuff is crazy.
It's
how you can't even do normal banking.
It's
if you run a business.
Yes, it's so much more complicated than that. Even, you know, it's a state to state thing. It's, you know, Pennsylvania just legalized it medically a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, knock on wood, they added pain management to it, which is something that, you know, New York doesn't. New York, you pretty much like have to have, you know, your eyes falling out, and then they still won't give you, you know, they won't give you flour to smoke, but they will give you edibles. But you have to be part of these 5 companies that have licenses that donate a lot of money to Andrew Cuomo. And this is a state-by-state thing. So the rules in New York are not the rules in Pennsylvania. Maryland, that's, you know, another one of the reasons we're relocating, is starting this year. Delaware started, but state-by-state is different. So we've started, we designed a product line, which is low-dose products that, you know, combined are... It's like kind of a petit four selection. Yeah, I was looking at other cannabis products in Colorado and across the country, and you have these things that are like 100 milligrams, a cookie or a bar, and nobody can eat that much cannabis. Like, when I've tested it, like, my limit is like maybe 10 milligrams. I have to adult, you know? I have to go home and I have to take care of my kids and stuff like that, but I still should have, I can't have a glass of wine. I need something sometimes to relax my muscles or, you know, deal with the pain that I get or whatever. So I wanted to do something where you can have like a five milligram bonbon or like a little Samoa bite or a financier. And maybe you don't even notice you're high, but your body feels better. Or if, you know, you're in a little bit of more pain or you want to relax and feel kind of buzzed, you can do two, sort of like a mix and match sort of thing. And I wanted to make it something that's really accessible for women of a certain age or just people of a certain age who, you know, we have that kind of that stigma from the war on drugs, you know, and cannabis and the way we're using cannabis, too, is, you know, it's not laced with PCP like it was back in the day. It's not alcohol, which is, I think, far more dangerous. I've seen a lot more of my friends die from alcohol than cannabis, which is, you know, zero.
Well, and now look at the opioid addiction problem.
I mean, this
country really has to come to its senses and just legalize marijuana across the country and deal with what Big Pharma has brought upon us.
Yeah, I mean, I've, you know, Bay Ridge was always considered a safe neighborhood, and I've got people, you know, shooting up on my front steps. I've caught them this, and this is like, you know, not the image of a drug addict. They're like, you know, white middle-class kids. I mean,
you and I are both native New Yorkers, and I really feel like it's the 80s all over again, where there are junkies everywhere, and you just didn't see that for a while, and now all of a sudden...
Yeah, there's the same junkie who harasses me all the time. And then he goes to jail. And then 2 weeks later, he's back out again.
But it's heartbreaking to see, you know, it's heartbreaking to see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, we need to help these people. You know, there's people who are in their 40s or professionals. And this is all because, like, maybe they had a, you know, they sprained their knee.
Yeah. And they say back problems. That's the biggest.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a lot of back problems. I got hit by a car a couple of years ago.
Oh.
I'm full of stories. But
you are a cat with nine lives.
Yeah. And I didn't want to take the pills. I'm like, this is, again, I have kids. You know, everything is through the lens of, like, trying to, you know, set a good example and taking care of them. But, yeah, I could have had the pills. I could have, you know, and I had the pills when I had cancer. They're good. They're very, very good. But I had the cognizance where I'm like, okay, we're not going to, you know, like, I have cancer. I have a good excuse. But when I don't have cancer, no. Like, that's not okay.
You know, when Claudia and I were researching our second issue, the theme was baked. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to cover all these bakers. But we also thought, you know, this whole cannabis movement, there's got to be somebody doing really interesting edibles. And at the time, there wasn't. Like, everything we found was basically, like, Toll House chocolate chip cookies with some pot in them.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you're going to bring some kind of gourmet element.
It's been, I've found the biggest challenge is dosing properly. Finding, you know, finding a way to make sure what you're eating is exactly the milligrams, I'm telling you. And that is still a challenge somewhat because, you know, a lot of people, they'll just throw some marijuana into, you know, butter and then they infuse it and you're kind of hoping for the best. We have been testing with organic oils and extractions, so it's a lot more precise. Eventually, when we do get to a point where we're either working with an oil manufacturer or dispensaries directly, we'll be able to afford the equipment to test individually. And then the other thing is the flavor. Marijuana tastes like grass. Poor marijuana tastes worse. By using a high-quality product, tastes better. But a lot of people just like, okay, you know, it's just going to, you know, it's just going to fuck you up. So we're just going to throw everything in here. And the point is to get you high. For us, it's not even just about covering up the taste sometimes. It's, you know, balancing the taste. It has notes of pine trees and resin and, you know, charcoal on a summer's evening. But, you know, it's taking what you got and working with it. You know, we've been working on a burnt orange marmalade, you know, thumbprint cookie, and it works really well. Honeys kind of work well with it. So it's, you know, it's complicated. But we want to make it something that can be, you know, it's like the same ritual as having a glass of wine after work. You know, it's something that is treating yourself well if, you know, you need it or, you know, for any given reason, whether it's stress relief or headaches or it's cancer or glaucoma, you know, but we want people to not feel ashamed of it. And we want people to get better.
We are going to take a quick break, but when we return, Claudia is going to talk to Allison all about the creative process. We'll be right back.
Boys and girls are on fire. Boys and girls are on fire.
Balducci's Fruit Stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Allison Robicelli of Robicelli's Bakery, which is preparing for world domination. So let's talk about these mashup desserts of yours that people can't get enough of. Mm-hmm. The Nutella lasagna. Or it's kind of spelled Nutella lasagna.
It was, and then the CEO of Nutella flew out to New York to try. It went global, which was, it started a satire. We did this one, like, jump the shark sort of summer. That's actually what we called the jump the shark summer. Because we got really tired of, you know, making kind of cool things. And everybody going, okay, so, you know, when are you going to make the next cronut? Or when are you going to make the next this or that? And we've really just gotten to a point where the shelf life of anything is like 2 weeks. And it's, you know, this week it's got to be rainbow. And now rainbows are already over. And then it's the Oreo bagel. And then it's this or that. So we were like, okay, well, let's just, you know, let's have fun and be silly. And we got a whiteboard and we wrote blank as the new cupcake. And we just started writing the most ridiculous things we could. So 1 week it was like green Jell-O. And we did an Ecto Cooler Jell-O. 1 week it was Canadians. We did like a smoked pork belly bread pudding with like a Crown Royal maple. And then one of them was Noodle Kugel. And we were like, well, Nutella and lasagna have the same two, like, last letters, and everyone likes Nutella, so we did that. It came back for Christmas, and I saw, I was on Facebook, and first of all, I'm already busy as hell because it's Christmas, and I'm on Facebook, and I see somebody posting it, and I messaged my friend. I was like, oh, hey, thanks for sharing that, and he's like, do you have any idea what's going on? I'm like, no. He's like, this was from Gizmodo. I'm like, okay. And next thing I know, I've got people from all over the world coming. I've got phone calls about it. You know, we were on TV in China and Italy. And then the CEO of Nutella came out to try it. And he loved it. And he asked it to be Nutella lasagna because he's like, I want my name bigger. And I'm like, all right. You know? And it's good. It's rich as hell. I could have like a really, really tiny piece of it, like a 2x2 piece. But it was just, you know, it was just something fun. Like lasagna was my favorite food growing up. And, you know, there's something about it, like getting a really big sloppy dessert together where it's kind of warm and it doesn't look pretty. And, you know, it's like just admitting what you're going to do to it. It's not twee. It's not sexy. It's just like get your face in it, you know. So that was cool. It was cool. It was a trip. It's delicious. You know, we had waffle cake. That one pretty big, too. The tiramisu was another thing, yeah. Which was just a tiramisu made out of matzah. Like, you know, my husband and I were not Jewish, which is, I think, why we enjoy cooking with matzah so much, because we don't have to eat it. But, yeah, we're the family that goes through 2 cases of matzah, you know, when it's out. And it was fun. People reacted really well to it. See, a couple of years ago, we did the chicken and waffles cupcake, which went viral. And it's always, you know, it's always an honor when people are, like, you know, kind of ripping you off or, like, copying you or, you know, just kind of being into what you're doing. It's a lot of fun for us. You know, everything we do, it's, you know, again, this is me and my husband. This is how we play. So it's... you know, it's a really, really enjoyable thing, and it makes me really happy that we kind of get to be a part of this for people.
How long do these things last? Are they just seasonal, or can you order them from your wholesaler?
Well, Nutella lasagna is on hiatus right now during the summer. We do a lot of mail order of it, and it's very labor intensive to make. So when the Baltimore shop opens this fall, I'm not going to give an exact date because you know how things work, but then you'll. It's a cold weather thing. Nobody needs to be eating Nutella lasagna in the summer. So, yeah, we do a lot of mail order. We do them by the slice. a ton at Christmas. The tiramisu is just during Passover. And, you know, we're kind of, again, back to the franchising thing. We've always been very seasonal and kind of, you know, making stuff up, and we're always writing new recipes. And now we're sort of like kind of taking a greatest hits and kind of figuring out something really, really steady. We're still going to be able to do riffs on things through the year, like, you know, monthly specials, like, you know, how like the filet of fish is really big, or shamrock shakes, but fancy shamrock shakes. And, you know, a lot of more like the creative stuff is going to go back into the food writing, you know, and the next book. We're possibly working on some other restaurant concepts, you know, talking to some other friends of ours in the business. So, you know, there's ways. Oh, and then, you know, obviously cannabis. We have a lot of stuff planned with that. And that's harder. That's harder to prototype because, again, milligrams, flavors, the man, all that jazz.
Well, let's talk. I know you said you hate cupcakes, but we should talk about them because you guys really put cupcakes on the map. So how did that start?
It was an accident. The story's in my cookbook. What happened was we had a gourmet shop and a catering company. We opened up the week before the stock market crash of 2008. Lost all our catering clients because a lot of them were friends from Wall Street. Nobody was going. I mean, we're so far removed from 2008. We forgot how bad it was. Like, the city was a ghost town. People didn't go out. People were terrified of losing their jobs, even if they hadn't, you know, yet. And we were trying to figure out a way to make some money and save the business because we put our life savings into it. And I had made a carrot cake years ago for an old man bar in Bay Ridge. This was like my first kind of gig. I started a little company at my parents' house. And somebody from the bar came in and he's like, you know, the waiter, Tim, said that you're here now. I want one of those carrot cakes. And we weren't really baking. Again, I had, when we opened the shop, I had an 18-month-old and a 6-week-old. So I'm balancing these two kids. I'm not baking. And I was like, listen, you know, $30 is $30. So I'll make you the cake. And he comes in the next week. And I was like, is it your birthday again? And he's like, no. But he's like, seriously, you make this cake every day? I'll buy this cake every day. So my husband and I, later in the week, we're having one of our quote-unquote meetings, which was us screaming at each other about how we're, you know, we're losing everything. And he's like, you know, what the hell do we do? He's like, we have all these great sandwiches and everything, and people aren't coming in. He's like, so what the hell do we do? What do we have? I'm like, well, we got that carrot cake. And he's like, great. He's like, we'll make 700 carrot cakes a week, and, you know, everything will be fine. And we're like, well, let's just make cupcakes. I'm like, we'll make 24, and we'll tell the guys at the bar, and then they'll come down for it, and then they'll see the sandwiches and get the menus, and then everything will grow organically. And that didn't happen. So 24 turned into 48, which turned into 100. And we were somewhat oblivious to the cupcake boom that was going on because it just wasn't our thing. You know, we'd seen a cupcake shop in our neighborhood. We'd heard about the Magnolia stuff. But it's, you know, really, my palate runs a little bit more savory. You know, I grew up Italian. I'd rather have a cannoli or a sfogliatelle than a cupcake. And it became this huge thing. People were coming in, again, like from other states. People were driving in from other states.
People are crazy about food trends.
Yes. We had one guy who drove in from Minnesota. We had, you know, somebody from Charm City Cakes who was in town come in, and we're like, what the hell is happening? And we started looking at cupcakes because our thing was it wasn't supposed to be a trend or funny. Like, we've never used food coloring. It was just like, we made these really great cakes in our prior lives. Why can't you just make them small? Like, why do I have to wait for a wedding of a rich friend who can afford a $10,000 cake? Why can't I get one for like $3? So that was it, you know? It was like, you just take something good, you make it small. It wasn't rocket science. You know, we kind of got on the map for that, and, you know, it came from there. And then once the bakery in Bay Ridge opened, you know, we'd been making other stuff for ages, but, you know, it was funny. All people ever wanted to do was talk about cupcakes. And then they're like, well, cupcakes are over. I'm like, but you still want to talk about them all the frickin' time. I'm like, you want to talk about this pie I made? They're like, no, let's talk about cupcakes. It was like, So when the shop opened, then people were eating more of the pies and everything. And the pies ended up on like a lot of best in New York City's lists. The brownies, the cookies. I eat a lot of cookies. That's my thing. So people kind of understood more what we were. We were always an American-style bakery. But we were from Brooklyn. I grew up with, you know, a Greek family next door and an Irish family. My best friend's first generation from Canton, China. Another one of my best friends moved here from Korea when she was 6. So, like, this is how we communicated. My friend's parents and grandparents didn't speak English, but they fed us. So it wasn't even like, it wasn't even a kind of conscious decision. It was like, oh, you know, yeah, of course, who hasn't had baklava? You know, who hasn't had these things? This is just what I grew up with. So, yeah, and people responded, and, you know, we just went with our gut. You know, after 2008, you lose everything. That means you have no more rules to follow. You just make them up as you go along.
Allison, my favorite thing in is your love letter to cupcakes, mm-hmm. which is the first essay in your cookbook. For those who haven't read it, can you describe what that love letter is and why you wrote it?
It was a bit like, you know, what I had just said, where, you know, what did cupcakes do to you? You know, like, I don't even need to like them, but I nobody's going to go after another food that much and just hate on it. It's a food, for Christ's sakes. There's other things in the world, you know, and we've gotten so myopic where, you know, everything's got to be a trend. And I hate the idea of food trends, because food is important. You know, you can't on one hand be like farm to table, everything's sustainable, food's important, our systems. And then the other hand going like, we're going to like this for 5 minutes. You know, it doesn't work like that. And if somebody wants to enjoy a cupcake, let them enjoy the frickin' cupcake. Why is this your problem? You know? And it's just, I'm not against cupcakes or anything. I'm just against silliness. Like, this is silly.
There was a serious sentence in the essay that really stuck with me. You wrote, maybe it's because of the sprinkles thing, or because some people are just allergic to joy and too myopic to understand, or maybe because for the first time in forever, an entire arm of the food service business is being owned and operated predominantly by women. Mm-hmm. And Lord knows we can't have that. That's right. I said it. You hate cupcakes, and therefore you're a sexist pig. Do you still feel that's true?
I had a lot of problems when I got into the industry in 2002. You know, I had a chef who said women belong in pastry and garmanger because they can't cook. I was bullied mercilessly. And it's definitely gotten easier for us in the industry, you know, for us being loud and complaining about it. But this was something that women in a lot of parts of the country could do out of their kitchens. This is something that women like. I mean, that's not my style. Like, I'm not pink and fluffy and, you know, Pinteresty. But there's women who are, and that's okay. You know, you can do what you want. And this was making them happy. It was giving them their first taste of entrepreneurship. It was giving them this feeling of, like, power and control that they could contribute something to their families. Or, I think a lot of people who were writing about cupcakes really have no idea how hard it is to balance a family and, you know, a career and life. You know, so if this was something that was giving women a great creative outlet, you know, yeah, we should be like, yeah, you know, this is great for you. And instead, we're all complaining about, like, oh, it's too twee, it's too stupid. I'm like, listen, this doesn't have to be your style, but don't take this from them. You know, people need this. People are working hard from this, and nobody should feel bad about doing it or creating it or enjoying it. And I can't think of another food that was as mercilessly bullied, or entrepreneurs who were bullied over, aside from cupcakes and maybe cake pops, but like, that was like the same thing on a stick.
Cake pops didn't take off as things. No. Yeah.
But until I read your essay, I really didn't connect the two, and it makes a huge amount of sense, sadly.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's hard for women. Something like 8% of the women who try to get funding for their restaurants get it. When we were looking for some investors to help us out, I was going out for like a year and a half. No luck. I sent Matt out a week.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
What year was that?
2011. And still now, like, I want to be like, oh, you know, I'm the big bad feminist. But I'll still have Matt lead with people when it comes to money. One, my husband's 6'6" and like 350 pounds, and he's terrifying. So that helps. But people have a tendency to take him more seriously. I can't tell you how many people have mansplained everything to me about business. And again, why I like working with Dan at FranSmart, you know, didn't treat me like that, you know, and that was like, wow. I'm like, you just treated me like a person, and it takes so little. And how sad is that? How sad? It's like, wow, you understand. I know what I'm talking about. And all those guys who like mansplain things to me about, you know, food trends and restaurants and cupcakes. I know the companies they started, they're all gone. I'm still here. You know, I'm on the radio. It's internet radio. You can download it whenever, you know. And I'm still here, guys.
It happens in every industry. We really need to do something about
that. Do you think things have gotten better?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as long as people like us are willing to talk about it. You know, and women really need to support other women. And we need to be rooting for each other. And we need to be helping out when we can. And when we fail, because, I mean, again, it there is a failure rate in this business. And I mean, God, I've failed so many times and I still fail, you know, but we have to support each other. You can't be like, yay, my competition is gone. Or like, yay, I hated her. We need to help each other and just be like, okay, you know, we're going to lift you up or give you that encouragement when, you're at your worst. Cause this is like, just as an entrepreneur, it's very scary and it's very risky. And nobody in their right mind should do it. But yeah, so I mean, find your support systems. And if you're a woman out there and you see women needing help, you know, do it. It's not that hard. Just don't be a dick. Just be a nice person. How hard is this?
That's the best advice.
Yeah.
But now we're going to head into our speed round.
Ooh.
Ooh. All right. Are you ready?
Sure.
Coffee or tea? Which do
coffee?
You... Oh, how do you take it?
Black. I go to Starbucks a lot. And venti Americano, black, sometimes two a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's in your refrigerator right now?
Nothing. there's always some whole milk. I don't do the skim bullshit. Whole milk, eggs, always lemons. I put lemons on everything. Leftover macaroni, a lot of leftover Chinese food. I have a problem with that. It's like the saddest chef refrigerator.
It's a New York fridge, basically.
Yeah.
How do you like your eggs?
I'm not really a big fan of eggs. I eat them a lot for dinner, not for breakfast, but I like them super, super crispy. Like you put oil in the pan, you get super hot, you drop some eggs on it, and then I throw it on like lentils or cabbage as dinner. I'm not a huge breakfast eater. I like breakfast for dinner, and I like cold Chinese food for breakfast.
What's the one thing you'd never eat?
Raisins. Fuck raisins. Yeah.
Favorite kitchen tool?
Oh, I love my citrus zester and the juicer and a big knife and my dishwasher. I love my dishwasher.
What a luxury.
Yeah, I know. This is like the best thing ever. Now where I'm moving, I'm like, does it have a dishwasher? Because I will not even consider it now. I'm spoiled.
What's your go-to snack?
Cookie butter out of the jar, peanut butter out of the jar, anything no dishes.
I'm so glad Allison didn't say almonds. Do you know how many of our guests have said almonds?
Oh, God.
Boring.
No. I'm like the worst eater ever. You know, sometimes I will go to McDonald's or White Castle. God, I love White Castle. I had them cater my wedding. True story.
If you were food or beverage, what would you be and why?
Probably the coffee.
No explanation needed there. Where do you want to travel to next?
Scotland. Everywhere. I grew up poor in Brooklyn. I haven't traveled, you know? So again, I'll go anywhere. Anywhere, you know? Prague, South Korea, Mexico.
North Korea?
Anywhere. I don't care. If you are out there and you want me to come to where you are, send me a ticket. I will show up.
With cupcakes, hopefully.
I'll show up with whatever the hell you want. I don't care. Get me out of here.
What's the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, I was a dental assistant when I was in high school. Oh. That was gross. Well, my mom's been in the business for actually like she's 60 and she started in this office when she was 14 or 15. So she's been out for like 45 years. My mom's awesome. My mom's like the coolest chick I've ever met. But yeah, holding people's tongues and sucking out saliva, that kind of sucked. I've been in a couple of kitchens that were really abusive. Oh, I was in this one kitchen. My first restaurant job, and this guy used to throw shit at me. Like, he threw, like, quart containers all the time, and one time he threw a hot waffle iron. He threw pint glasses, and I was like, I thought that this is what all restaurants were, and I was coming home crying every night, and I'm like, but if I quit, I'm a pussy, and I can't hack it. And then I talked to somebody else in my old catering gig. He's like, yeah, quit. He's like, this guy's crazy. And I actually ran into him a couple of years ago. I was doing some big fancy food event, and I heard his laugh. I thought he had left for L.A., and I heard his laugh, and I turned around, and he was there. And I dove under the table. I freaked the fuck out. And my husband's like, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, you remember that guy? I'm like, he's there. He's there. And he's the chef at a restaurant Matt used to be the pastry chef at. And he's like, Al, he's like, you're promoting your cookbook right now. You're the headlining chef, and this guy's a dick. Get out from under the table. I'm like, no! So yeah, we don't always have our grown-up moments.
Oh, traumatic.
Yeah.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for being on Radio Cherry Bomb. You're an inspiration.
Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing to come. Thank you so much.
You know, and please keep in touch because we'd really love to hear about your Baltimore exploits.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I put myself out there, you know, again, working on a new book. I'm food writing again. You guys can find me if you need me. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, we'll be right back with author and trailblazer Mimi Sheraton. episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinchpan, and Sierra Tishkart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart. Here's the latest installment from Mimi Sheraton's 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die from her book of the same name.
Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton. I'm the author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die. Here's one to get you started. This is the meal that lasts all day and more. It's an Irish and English breakfast. It's a delectable model for self-instruction. The over-the-top breakfast seems to be gaining popularity outside of its home country as a brunch item in many of our restaurants here. Once a daily meal for farm workers and anyone preparing for a day of really hard labor, today it is more of a weekend indulgence that one might risk a couple of times a year. Picture a plate, if you can, piled with fried eggs, black and white pudding, black pudding being blood sausage, the white containing oatmeal and leeks, thick and smoky rashers of Irish back bacon, fried tomato, fried potatoes, fried bread, and mushrooms, and maybe beans too, and don't forget jam. A strong cup of breakfast tea is the traditional accompaniment, and traditional or not, a hot whiskey-spiked Irish coffee topped with whipped cream might be just the right finish for the meal and maybe for you too.
Thank you, Mimi. Be sure to pick up Mimi's book, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, at your favorite indie bookstore. Speaking of bookstores, we'll be at Omnivore Books on Food in San Francisco next Wednesday, the 18th. We're throwing a launch party for the new issue of Cherry Bomb, which is all about California. If you live in the Bay Area, we'd love to see you. You don't have to RSVP, you can just come by. We'll have drinks and snacks for everybody, unless too many people show up.
Thank you for our sponsors for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to become a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu. Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes. And Baldor Specialty Foods. They curate and deliver the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Alexandra Macover, and I'm the creator of Spur of the Moments. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? My cousin, Samantha. She's an incredible entrepreneur who always gives me a boost of positive energy when I need it.